You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This all season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back on our Taco Tuesday episode here on Steelers Week. Kevin Ostreicher here. And of course, back with us is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown to discuss all things Yannick Ngakoue, a little bye week check-in and some AFC North talk, as well as a mini preview of the Ravens and Steelers game. Spencer, it's a busy schedule for us today here on the docket. How you doing today?
Doing fantastic. It has been a fun week to cover the Ravens and for Ravens fans as well. We just get lucky. I mean, it's really crazy trying to think big picture a little bit, thinking back to, you know, that rough Patriots divisional round loss back in 2014 and the way that things kind of went after that for the next couple of years, being a, you know, consistently above average, but somewhere between above average and mediocre, depending on the time of the year. And not a lot of excitement, not a fun offense, not a lot of big names, you know, just at fan value, not incredibly exciting. And what has happened ever since that 32nd pick got traded up for Lamar Jackson has been insane. The trades, Marcus Peters, Calais Campbell, the MVP, 14-2, the first round bye, the best record in franchise history. And then, you know, a hot start, 5-1, leading up to Yannick Ngakoue has been exciting. It's been fun. It's a fun time to be a Baltimore Ravens fan. Eric DaCosta has showed now that he is not overly aggressive, like maybe a Les Snead or some of the other, slipping my mind down, Mickey Loomis down in New Orleans, but he is calculated and persistent and has a very strong concept of value. Next time I go buy a car, I'm going to try and bring Eric DaCosta with me. Let's just leave it at that. The dude knows how to walk away, it sounds like, but also knows when the value is there, when he's getting a good deal, the right player, the right price. The Ravens land Yannick Ngakoue. It's just fun. It's just fun. And we'll get into the more details, but that's my opening takeaway.
Yeah, no, and literally, it's like, for Baltimore, at least, you mentioned over these last few years, it has been exciting. And for Eric DaCosta, he knows that the Ravens window is now. You have Lamar Jackson on his rookie contract, and that's not to say the Ravens window isn't going to close anytime soon. I mean, you obviously have to make the right moves or else the window will close, but for my opinion, that's not going to happen because Eric DaCosta, you mentioned it, he knows how to walk away. He's not going to mortgage the entire future. Baltimore's been so successful at, you know, drafting strength on strength and making sure the roster is strong in many different areas. So, for example, when the Ravens go into a season every year with 25 million corners and lose all but three of them, you still have solid depth at certain positions. So with this Yannick Ngakoue move, Spencer, I loved it because pass rush, it was a need, but at the same time, it wasn't, because Baltimore, I think, in the pass rush department, had kind of been improving, albeit against a few suspect offensive lines. But Spencer, I want to first talk about that Ngakoue move and get your initial reactions on the trade, you know, whether you thought Ngakoue was even on the market, how good of a value the Ravens got here with Ngakoue, and just your overall thoughts and analysis. So let's start there.
Yeah, I think Yannick Ngakoue is, number one, to describe him as a player, explosive, but also has technical refinement. He has a very developed set of pass rushing moves. He has some tools on his tool belt, and his hammer is a cross chop. He likes to speed rush the edge. He has incredible get off. He has great snap anticipation and can really run the arc. He uses a cross chop where he essentially, it's difficult to say without putting a video on, but he essentially keeps offensive tackles and really mainly left tackles. That's where he lines up typically. Left tackles hands off of him, as he's has better ankle flexion, better dip, more agility than any Ravens pass rusher, I think, since Elvis Dumervil. I wouldn't say they're terribly dissimilar, but I wouldn't say they're too similar. But overall, he presents an ability to speed rush the arc and actually turn corner and turn those into sacks and a lot of strips, 16 strips in his young career, only 25 years old with 16 strips. Huge already. That is all great and dandy. That is kind of the face value of it. Moving on, he obviously played with Calais Campbell in Jacksonville. Saxonville is now Harm City. That is what we're going to call it. And Harm City is going to be fun when you have Calais Campbell, who we saw against the Eagles, execute a TE, a defensive tackle, defensive end stunt, even though Bowser wasn't actually lined up at defensive end, but with Tyus Bowser, where essentially Campbell is perfect to execute stunts as a tackle, where he has a looper come inside, like we saw with Tyus Bowser and like we've seen many times with Yannick Ngakoue in Jacksonville, because he has such length but also power. So he can really wrap up two blockers and occupy them, and that allows someone like Ngakoue, who has so much explosion, can create such tight angles and round so well and then finish, to come basically flying untouched into the B gap. And that is a thing of beauty when you also have Bowser and you also have Judon and you also have Derek Wolfe and some other guys you can get. Pernell McPhee has had a great year, well above expectation of what you get out of him for his price tag. So having that ability, knowing that they've been able to do it before with Campbell and with Ngakoue down in Jacksonville, is going to be a lot of fun. I think that a big takeaway for a lot of people is that, oh, you know, the Ravens tried to blitz Patrick Mahomes and it didn't work, so they got Yannick Ngakoue. I think that is true to an extent. It gives them, it opens things up a little bit more, but I think it opens things up in coverage a little bit more. I think that while the Ravens love to be exotic and give different looks and roll coverage and try and move late pre-snap, all of that stuff is great and dandy. But when you're playing a quarterback that is kind of used to it and has a high IQ, can pick up on tendencies, is well coached, like a Ben Roethlisberger, like a Patrick Mahomes, they understand there's just going to be a soft spot, and they kind of pick up on where those soft spots are going to be. So I think that in coverage, the Ravens have been hesitant to blitz and play man, which is, and press and jam at the line of scrimmage. And that's what we saw a little bit more of last year, and I think a lot of that had to do with Earl Thomas being back there. And while Deshaun Elliott has been great, he is not the same single high presence, nor is Chuck Clark exactly, that teams kind of just feared and avoided. So now, if you can go trot out Ngakoue, combinations of Ngakoue, Bowser, McPhee, Judon, Campbell, Wolf, Williams, those guys, and you can rush four or five of them, I think it allows you to kind of just go play man. You don't need as much chaos and noise all the time. Well, of course, that pre-snap confusion is fantastic, and they're going to keep doing it. In crucial situations, you can kind of just let Marlon Humphrey, Jimmy Smith, and Marcus Peters go strap up, and that's what they're best at. Marlon Humphrey is at his best as a press man corner. Marcus Peters is at his best as a press man corner, and so is Jimmy Smith. So having the ability to kind of rush five, have two guys help in coverage in a single high and then a hook, a linebacker or two safeties, something of the sort, it's going to put a lot of pressure. And a good example of that being executed well was what the Ravens did in Buffalo last year. That was a game plan that really demonstrated that. What happens when you're able to do that is the quarterback knows it's coming. They have to get rid of the ball quickly. And when you have guys that can press and have really tight contested catches and break passes up and things like that, quarterback either has to make number one, the right read, number two, get the ball out quickly, and number three, throw an accurate pass very quickly. Or he, number four, gets hit, sacked, has to avoid pressure, all of that good stuff. So I think a less drama pre-snap is the big takeaway. I think that the Ravens don't have to blitz, but they've never had to blitz, in my opinion, as much as some people make it out to be. I think that's just what Wink Martindale wants to damn do. And I love it. I think it's great. I think it's philosophically advanced, and teams are picking up on it. The increased usage of blitzing in the NFL has gone up on average about 9% this decade. And that doesn't sound like a ton, but back in 2011, it was about 14% of snaps sent five or more. And now it's about 24%. This year, I think it's up to 27, if I recall correctly. So blitzing is trending up. The Ravens are at the apex of that, and so are is the team that they're going to play this week, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are actually blitzing on over half of their snaps. The only team to do that currently. The Ravens are just under, right around 48-49%. So in the end, I think that the blitzing kind of stays, but you can mix it up and do some different things. I think it's going to help in coverage a lot, and obviously get some more sacks. Sacks turn, you know, getting a sack or hitting a quarterback as they are throwing the football, either or, takes a drive. So typically a drive has a 57% chance of an offense achieving one first down. If you hit the quarterback while they're throwing the football or sack them, that plummets down to 21% since 2017 from the point they're sacked forward. So sacks are drive killers, man. And I think getting even more of those, getting even more hits, the quick pressure is going to be outstanding. And Ngakoue does quick pressure better than anyone. He is the only player to appear on Next Gen Stats' fastest sacks list four times since 2017. Each year they post the 20 fastest sacks in terms of seconds. And he's only one with four. And all four of them, someone tried to block him. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun to see. I think he's going to be a drive killer. And I also think that Wink Martindale is going to get him matched up on some tight ends, matched up on some running backs, does a great job fitting the defensive front, creating alignments, confusing pass pro, and getting a guy like Ngakoue free rushes or getting a guy like Ngakoue matched up on a tight end a couple times a game. He's a finisher. That is what separates him from what the Ravens had prior to acquiring him. He is a finisher. So I think that Ngakoue is going to translate more of those pressures into sacks. And that goes from being a good thing into a great thing. So as John Harbaugh said in his press conference on Monday, we're a better team. The Ravens are a better team. He said we are a better team than we were without him. So I think that's the easiest way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. It just gives Don Martindale yet another weapon. And, you know, like he needed more, right? But you have to give him, you know, stuff to work with. And Eric DaCosta has certainly done that over the last two trade deadlines. And even if you look at the offseason, acquiring Marcus Peters and Calais Campbell, signing Derek Wolfe, drafting guys like Patrick Queen, and now bringing in guys like Yannick Ngakoue. Martindale, just with all these weapons, with all these versatile weapons, and that's not even getting into the guys already on the Ravens roster who can fill multiple roles and do multiple things. Matthew Judon, Marlon Humphrey, Jimmy Smith. So many guys on this defense who can play so many different positions at such a high level. And Ngakoue is someone, you know, you don't need him in on 100% of snaps. You know, you're not going to use him as a situational pass rusher either. But you can give defenses multiple looks with Ngakoue in there that's going to maximize and utilize his strengths. So overall, I'm super excited about what this move brings to the Ravens. And I mean, we'll get to see it in action in a pretty big game against the Pittsburgh Steelers here coming up on Sunday. But we're going to head into our first break. And when we get back, we'll be talking about a little bit of a bye week check-in and also checking on the rest of the AFC North. So stay tuned for that. And we'll be right back. This football season will be different. And Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need into a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the cameraman orders the parts from his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your car or truck and choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, right locked on in there. How'd you hear about us, Box? So they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. We are back here with our second segment of this Taco Tuesday Locked On Ravens episode here on Steelers Week. Kevin Ostrich, your host, still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, I think that this Ravens, you know, we kind of touched on it last week. It was a blessing in disguise for this Ravens team. Guys like Marcus Peters, who I think was playing pretty hobbled, these injured Ravens were able to get up to at least as close to full strength as they could get with an extra week off of football. Guys like Anthony Levine and Mark Ingram, Derek Wolfe, able to get back and hopefully play against the Steelers here coming up on Sunday. But Spencer, as we do kind of a bye week check-in here on the Ravens first, how pleased or not pleased are you with what you've seen from a general perspective out of this Ravens team leading up to their bye?
Very pleased. I believe that the Ravens defense has been great. They're the most expensive defense in the league, over $100 million on that side of the ball. They only have spent more in that Marlon Humphrey getting an extension. They acquire Yannick Ngakoue. So they're really kind of going the counterculture route of the NFL currently And I think that's why they had so much success last year, and things kind of went awry for that defense early last year. And now this year they show out. They are creating more turnovers. They're leading the NFL headed into this week, headed into this bye. So those are going to look different now. But in turnovers, they also are third in the NFL in sacks per game heading into this past week. And they've been doing both, getting pressure, creating turnovers. I think Patrick Queen has stepped up. Calais Campbell rounding into form. I think it's easy to jump to conclusions, be reactionary on a week-to-week basis. But this is a 16-game season. It's a long season. It's 4 months. And it's a practice sport. It's a sport where you spend 99.9% of your time practicing, weightlifting, training. Only 0.1% of the time is spent playing the games. So having that time and getting the game experience where that 0.1% is pretty indicative of about 50% of what's to come, they need that. You need Calais Campbell to get a couple games under his belt, to have a game where he goes and gets three sacks and a bunch of quarterback hits and a bunch of tackles for loss and gets a defensive player of the week. You need Patrick Queen to make some young, fast error in defending a couple screens very early against Kansas City. You need Deshaun Elliott to get his feet under him. Some of these guys, some of these newcomers, you know, Jimmy Smith getting some snaps at safety, doing some different things. So the defense has been outstanding. Offensively, it's kind of what we expected. We expected Marshall Yanda to be a big loss, and it has been. Tyree Phillips has shown great length, great power, not great footwork, not a great run blocker at this point. He is pretty solid in pass protection, which you would hope out of an SEC tackle that ends up being a guard, third round pick, is able to do. But in the run game, he hasn't been able to really pull, especially the last few weeks, and get to the second level and reach and sustain blocks and those things. So it's been tough. Matt Skura recovering from a knee injury hasn't been as sharp as he was before it. That is to be expected. The one thing that I think hurt a little bit worse than expected was the departure of Hayden Hurst. And to me, a lot of people like to ask this question about the Ravens offense currently. What is their offensive identity? Last year, to me, the offensive identity was in the tight ends and Pat Ricard as well. The four horsemen, as I called them. The power pistol, being able to trot out Mark Andrews, Hayden Hurst, Nick Boyle, and Pat Ricard in combinations, presented a unique matchup because the defense always matches the offense. And whether it's at the line of scrimmage setting the front or whether it's the personnel, if you see the Ravens, a team that ran the ball at a historic rate with a Hall of Fame guard, an all-pro left tackle, a very good tight end, couple good running backs, and an electric running quarterback, come out in 13 personnel or 22 personnel, you're going to put in your linebackers. You're going to put in your run stuffers. Then they were able to spread the field and go empty because you have Hayden Hurst and Mark Andrews, guys that are very competent, vertical, able to stretch the defense vertically, make big plays, run after the catch, you know, have a guy like Hollywood in there that presents speed, have Mark Ingram out wide and do some things and go empty and spread out a bunch of run stuffers and, you know, make Lamar Jackson the fastest guy in the box by about, you know, 0.2 of a second in the 40. So that is going to be interesting as a concept. And it worked really, really well up until the playoffs. Guys were hurt, you know, awful execution, game plan wasn't the best, whatever. But this year, empty hasn't worked well. Lamar Jackson's EPA, or as SIS, the company I work for, we have our own metric, total points saved, or total points earned is offensive, pardon me, total points earned. Lamar Jackson last year was first in EPA per dropback, estimated points added per dropback out of empty formations. He was also first in points earned out of empty formations, empty backfield formations. He is now 38th and 37th, respectively, in those. Teams kind of figured it out a little bit about the empty and what goes on with that. I don't think the connection with the receivers has been quite the same. He doesn't quite trust the absence of Marshall Yanda in that line a little bit. And it seems like he's kind of been taking that free blitzer that might come. Teams have been sending the blitz a lot against it and trying to do too much. And I'd like to see him check down just a little bit more, you know, get those hot reads out. And Lamar Jackson's 23. This is a young offense. So, you know, I've went on some tangents. I've wrote some articles. Ravens are the second cheapest offense in the NFL, $56 million invested into the offensive side of the football this year. The second cheapest in football behind the Denver Broncos at $50 million. They are scoring 29.8 points per game headed into this week. I don't have the updated stats yet, and Monday Night Football is not over, but that was the seventh figure in the NFL. All of the teams ahead of them have invested at least $81 million on offense, with six of the seven spending at least $98 million on offense. So it's a young, cheap offense. And I think we've seen some growing pains. I think we haven't quite seen them figure out what to do with the receiver rotation. I'd like to see Miles Boykin get less snaps, but more targets. I'd like the ball to be spread out more. Willie Snead, I think, has never done anything to prove he is undeserving of targets in Baltimore. Of course, everyone wants Devin Duvernay a little bit more involved, but they're, you know, getting him eased in. And it seems like the coaching staff might have a better read on that than the average fan. But his usage has gone up and up and up, and I think he'll be a full-time kind of heavy rotation guy, 35-plus percent of snaps moving forward. And now, again, back to that identity point, what is the Ravens' identity on offense? To me, it's kind of the Lamar Jackson show, and you're putting a lot of pressure on him with, you know, Hollywood Brown being a good, maybe not great receiver. He can't really flip the field with yards after the catch unless he really has a seam. We see him kind of take care of himself, which I think is a good thing. And then Mark Andrews gets a lot of attention. And then what else is happening in the passing game? The run game is not as good as it was last year. They have a really good offense or a really good ground game, 160-some yards a game, you know, averaging over 5 yards a carry, but they don't have a historic ground game. And I think that Pat Ricard, you know, everyone thought, oh, Pat Ricard can replace Hayden Hurst. How the hell is a defensive tackle convert going to replace a first-round draft pick tight end who runs a 4-6? It's not going to happen. So the Ravens have Pat Ricard currently playing 35% of offensive snaps. I think that's a little bit too much. He doesn't threaten the defense vertically, and we've seen the boxes really creep up. You know, Lamar hasn't been great hitting those deep shots over top, but the number one bright thing here is that the defense is creating turnovers and the offense isn't turning the football over. And Lamar Jackson is arguably the best quarterback in the red zone. So at this point, you know, you need a little bit more on first down. You need to change things up. I think that's less Ricard, less Boykin, more Duvernay, a little more Prochet. You know, who knows what happens with Dez Bryant? That's, you know, for all we know, he could be cut. He could end up being, you know, Pro Bowler or anything in between. Who the hell knows right now? But at this point, it's trying to innovate the offense moving forward. More of those screens, more of those jet sweeps, more of those reverses, more manufactured open space in the passing game. And I think just taking some more deep shots at times. And I know they don't want to turn the football over. They want to play the field position game, have a strong running attack and all that stuff. But at this point, you know, going into the bye week, rehearse it, get it. And when defenses come up and stack that box, you have to make them pay. And if you can't, you can't win a Super Bowl. So at this point, it's a young offense, needs a little more experience, had some time in the bye week to self-assess and do all that great stuff. So I think the Ravens are in a very good place. They still have the highest point differential in the NFL, even after the bye. And they've got a big matchup coming this week. So they've got an extra week on the Steelers. And I feel like they've been very well prepared for the Steelers the last couple of years. So it's going to be a big game and show what they're made of. There's going to be a lot of attention on that game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a big matchup with Pittsburgh this week, Spencer, because, you know, the last time the last undefeated team in the AFC came into M&T Bank Stadium, it was the New England Patriots last year in Week 9, and the Ravens pretty much manhandled them. But you're right, especially on the offensive side of the ball, you have to open up the field. And part of that includes, I think, getting weapons for Lamar Jackson. I do think that the people on the roster right now, he can work with those. And, you know, Miles Boykin has definitely been a disappointment. Willie Snead hasn't offered you what you thought he was going to offer you. These guys are good blockers, but at the end of the day, if the defenses don't feel threatened, they're going to try to plug up what they do feel threatened from, and that is the run game. So we've seen Mark Ingram have a bit of a down year. We've seen the Ravens move away from their rushing offense at certain points when arguably they probably shouldn't. So I do agree, Spencer. I think the loss of Hayden Hurst was an underratedly big one, and hopefully they'll be able to find that production in somebody else as the season goes on. But a little bit of an AFC North check-in here, Spencer. The rest of the AFC North, this division next year is going to have 4 really, really good teams. Obviously, it's not the Bengals' year right now. They're most likely not going to make the playoffs, but Joe Burrow and the Bengals team has shown me something this year. And so, Spencer, I want to get your perspective, not just on the Bengals, but from what you've seen out of the 3 other teams in the AFC North being the Steelers, Browns, and Bengals.
Well, I will start with the Bengals because I've scouted a couple of their games for Sports Info Solutions, and they're a lot better than people think they are. You know, you and I were talking offline here, and I didn't even realize, but Bengals have only lost 1 game by more than 1 score at this point. The Chargers, 16-13, they lose by 3. Browns take them by 5, and then again by 3. The Colts came back and beat them by 4, and the Eagles they tied with. So Ravens are the only team to blow them out at this point, but they're a scrappy bunch. Joe Burrow makes it happen. I know that's a blanket statement, hashtag analysis statement, but he really keeps them in games and is able to slice and dice underneath, make a couple plays with his legs. They have an explosive receiver group. all they need is an offensive line. Their defense has been end over end more disciplined, more well-coached, tackling better. They have a bunch of young linebackers, Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis, Gaither, that are scrappy and disciplined and make plays and, you know, tackle effectively and can competently do some things in coverage. So I think that's a solid team over there. Not totally sold on Zach Taylor quite yet. We shall see. Next year is kind of his poor get off the pot time. So that will be interesting. But then moving on to the Browns, we'll kind of go up the ranks. Baker Mayfield finally starting to show some signs of what we saw his rookie year. And that's being a guy who throws really accurately outside the pocket and on the move, able to throw the ball downfield, put very catchable balls on, do some things in the red zone, throw some super high kind of quote-unquote overthrown but accurate throws, and strong running game. Their offensive line is basically what the Bengals should wish for. Wills has been really strong the last couple of weeks. They signed Conklin, who is an improvement over what they had, and then they've got a couple hogs in there in the middle and a couple competent tight ends, as David Njoku reportedly wants out, but he's balled when he's been healthy. Austin Hooper gets dirty in the run game, and Harrison Bryant has been a sneakily, you know, successful rookie that didn't have a lot of expectation out of him. On the defensive side of the ball, they got a couple stars. They got Denzel Ward, who makes plays, can really run with a number one receiver, and Myles Garrett. That front four creates pressure, and while the Steelers and the Ravens kind of put them to sleep, tuck them in, they are able to compete with a lot of other teams. And, you know, I think they're a little propped up right now when you go look at their schedule. The AFC North really plays some dreadful teams this year, and I think we all kind of knew that, and it's been just as expected. But the Browns end up, you know, putting the absolute rough shot on the Cowboys, 49 points. Then we kind of figure out that their defense is maybe one of the top five worst in the last 50 years. That Colts team, you never know what you're going to get. They're kind of a mixed bag and stay close in games. But other than that, you know, absolutely trounced by the Steelers and the Ravens, and then a couple games of the Bengals, and they ended up beating the Washington football team there. So it's really tough to say what they're going to be, but it feels like they're going to be a playoff team. Some interesting games for them coming up. The Raiders, a very tough matchup this weekend. The Texans, who, you know, aren't good, but they feel like a good, bad team, if that makes sense. And going down the stretch, they got Titans, they got Ravens again, and some interesting matchups there. So I feel like they're going to be a 9-7, 10-6 kind of team. And, you know, snag that 7 or that 6 seed. And then moving on to the Steelers, they're just disciplined and well-coached. They have an explosive defensive front. They're a really well-balanced team. They can do some things in the ground game offensively. They also have an incredible quick-strike passing game. If you go look at the heat charts, the heat maps, it's a lot of underneath stuff because Ben Roethlisberger is processing at the level you would expect a two-time Super Bowl champion, you know, vet to do, a guy who's clearly very focused. He's very sharp. He's been hitting underneath, able to get the ball into the hands of Juju and Deontay Johnson, and hit a couple deep shots to Chase Claypool there, who's been outstanding. Chase Claypool has been everything Ravens fans wanted Miles Boykin to be, and I've got to admit, you know, I didn't see that with Claypool coming out of Notre Dame. I thought similar system. I think the recency bias of Miles Boykin kind of made me lump them in together, and maybe it's the Steelers coaching staff and Ben being a veteran quarterback able to communicate some things like we saw in that Philly kind of seam route where tells Claypool to split the seam and gets him the ball and walks into the end zone. But really advanced hand usage at the line of scrimmage, able to release, keep himself clean, use his size, speed, physicality, and go up and get the ball. And had a couple awesome, awesome contested catches on 9 routes and 50-50 ball situations. So that offense can do some things. They got a couple competent tight ends in Eric Ebron and Vance McDonald, as well as a decent offensive line. So, you know, they're going places. They're undefeated right now. I think that they, you know, snuck by the Titans a little bit, blew that lead, but they are well-coached, well-disciplined. They have an explosive defensive front. As I mentioned, Devin Bush is a huge loss that will probably weigh on them ultimately. But in the back end, they got some players. Mike Hilton, maybe one of the most underrated players in the NFL, slot corner, who stays in the box, blitzes as well as, you know, pretty much any slot corner in the NFL, makes plays, but can't fill that void of Devin Bush. Got Fitzpatrick on the back end, you know, Joe Hayden, Steven Nelson able to do some things. So they're a stout group through and through, just really well balanced. They feel like a team that can win in January. They're gonna be a tough matchup for teams, and we haven't seen them, you know, have a bad game. So that's a good sign. That shows consistency, that shows good coaching, good game planning, and all that good stuff. So around the AFC North, you know, kind of the past, present, and future, if you will, where it's the Steelers in the present, the Bengals of the future, and I guess the Browns don't quite make sense of the past because it feels like their best is still ahead of them. But three teams that are competitive, that are able to put up points, and it's fun. It's exciting. Feels like old school AFC North football a little bit with a modern spin of more offense, more high flying points, but still some damn good defenses.
Yeah, and you know, the AFC North is going to have their fair share of games this year as well, but also next year, of just those gritty, grinded out games. And some of the games, yeah, sure, they'll be high-flying offensive games. We've seen when Cleveland and Baltimore play each other, for the most part, those are usually high-flying offensive games. But, you know, getting back to the old Pittsburgh and Baltimore rivalry, you know, that's a game that I would love to see on Sunday that ends up being one of those grinded out nose of the football wins for one of these teams. You know, whoever wants it more gets it. And we'll talk about that Pittsburgh game coming up on Sunday with Baltimore in our final segment. We're going to head into our final break now. And when we get back, we'll be talking both on the offensive and defensive sides of the ball, what Baltimore has to do to win the game. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. We are back with our final segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, this might be the Ravens' biggest game of the 2020 season as they are getting ready to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. There will be fans allowed inside the stadium this time. I believe the number is just under 4,000. I'm not exactly sure on the exact number, but it'll be nice to have some of the Ravens flock back in M&T Bank Stadium. But Spencer, let's start on the offensive side of the ball for the Ravens, because you mentioned the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, the guys they have in the back end of their secondary. You mentioned Mike Hilton. I think he's honestly one of their best defensive players, somebody who they use coming off of the edge quite a bit on the blitz, and just an overall Swiss Army knife for them. What does Baltimore have to do on the offensive side of the ball to win this football game?
Well, the first and most obvious one is never more true, and that's protect the football. This is a game where you can't give a very efficient offense. They will be able to take advantage of opportunities. Like I mentioned earlier, Ben is sharp mentally right now, and they can slice you underneath. So take care of that football. Number two is stay out of second and long. Stay out of third and long. And that might have to be veering away from the run game a little bit on first down. In 2019, the Ravens rushing on first down averaged 5.27 yards per carry. That was the most in football by almost a half a yard. It was the same margin between second and between first and second as it was from second to 11th place. So the Ravens were running the football at what we call an outlier level. They were an outlier. They were an anomaly in the NFL. They were running the ball better last year on first down in particular than 20 NFL teams were throwing the ball in terms of estimated points added. That's not normal. Hence the anomaly. Hence the outlier. This year they've kind of crashed back down to earth, but they're still good. You know, not necessarily great or definitely not historic in doing so. They're averaging 4.11 yards per rushing play on first and 10. That's good for ninth. It's good. It's good. It's all right. It's above average. It's good. It's not what you need to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have dudes that are going to eat up front, and I think it's going to be a test similar to the Eagles game where Fletcher Cox or Cam Hayward or Tyson Alualu is going to get penetration into the backfield, especially if Tyree Phillips is out there. I really think it's Ben Powers' time. I've been beating that drum for a while, but for some reason unbeknownst, that has not been the move, and apparently he is third string behind Patrick McCary, seeing as how McCary filled in for Phillips and Powers kind of rotated in. But moving along, you can't rely on the run to win the game for you on first down, especially when you're kind of in a neutral situation from the 20 to the 20, not in the red zone, in other words. And I think that if the Ravens find themselves in second and long, that's going to be a tall task. T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, Cam Hayward, Tyson Alualu, Stephon Tuitt. That's the best defensive line in football. I don't care who has anything else to say. It's the best defensive line in football. They're going to get after it. The Steelers blitz a ton. Luckily, Lamar Jackson's very good under pressure, has been good against the blitz in non-empty sets, but he's going to need to be accurate. That's an easy, low-hanging fruit statement, but he's going to need to be accurate on the outside of the football field. And I think it's time to continue pushing the ball to Marquise Hollywood Brown on those one-on-ones if you can get him. I think he ran by Joe Hayden quite a few times last year. Didn't get taken advantage of. Some of those are decoys, you know, the primary read's not there, yada, yada, yada. But you got to back this damn defense up off the start, or that pass rush is going to come after you. They're going to make plays in the run. Stout defense, they create turnovers. They have Minka Fitzpatrick on the back end, who I think is not quite the incredible player that he might be made out to be, but he's very versatile. He's great against tight ends, a nice sheriff back there. And, you know, their corners are nothing to sneeze at. Steven Nelson, Joe Hayden, two very strong players. They obviously miss Devin Bush, but they have Vince Williams, who is a stout run-defending linebacker and a great blitzer. And we mentioned Mike Hilton and what he can do. So that unit is strong overall. But if they can avoid, if the Ravens can avoid second and long into third and long, maintain the football, and, you know, punch it in the red zone.
Yeah, no, I love that analysis because I completely agree with you. I think a lot of people going into this game, especially looking at Pittsburgh, are saying, oh, well, Pittsburgh isn't a 6-0 team. And I agree with that, but you look at their defense. That defense is, I think, the best in the NFL. You know, Baltimore is up there, but Pittsburgh has that beast of a defensive line, like you mentioned. Their secondary is phenomenal. Devin Bush's loss does hurt. I do agree. But overall, Baltimore just has to get back to what they've been doing and what has given them success over the last year or so. And I think you cannot rely on the run game overall, but you do have to use it to your advantage. And Spencer, I want to next talk about this Ravens defense going up against Ben Roethlisberger and Pittsburgh's myriad of just good receivers. They have a bunch of them. Their depth at receiver is amazing. What do the Ravens have to do on the defensive side of the ball to win this game?
In terms of those receivers matchup wise, I think that you essentially have to put Marlon Humphrey with Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson is who they like to throw to on third down if hasn't been banged up. He's missed a good bit of time so far this year, but he's their target monster. He is amazing after the catch and incredible at forcing missed and broken tackles. Before he was injured, he was leading the NFL in that category and then did it again quite a few times. Saw him find the end zone twice. He's their separator. While Chase Claypool and Juju are kind of the, you know, crossing route or fade, or Juju does the slot rule, Claypool kind of does the quick hitters as well as the goes. He doesn't work across the middle of the field a ton. He's kind of the boundary presence. But overall, they like to get the ball out super quickly. They have had a really good screen game. They use Ray McCloud, a player you're going to hear at some point on jet sweeps and reverses and pop passes and all that kind of stuff. He's very explosive to the perimeter. So overall, I mean, they've got some young, explosive weapons that are hungry. And Ben Roethlisberger, who's able to kind of really navigate them on the football field, especially in pre-snap. And Roethlisberger is certainly a shell of his former self athletically, but mentally, I mean, he really couldn't be stronger in terms of, you know, understanding where the weak spot is going to be. He is getting the ball out currently, according to Next Gen Stats, at 2.29 seconds per snap on passing plays. That is by far the lowest in the NFL. The next is Dwayne Haskins at 2.39, and there are only four quarterbacks in the NFL under 2.5 seconds. So that gives you an idea. He's at 2.29. It's Nick Foles, Fitzpatrick, Haskins, and Roethlisberger. Doesn't hold the ball long. He will. That doesn't mean he doesn't throw deep ever. He'll kind of float some that he gets out quickly, but taking those quick passes away is going to be imperative. And rushing four, using creeper blitzes. What Ben also does is he doesn't roll out a bunch. When he does move, he's going to be stepping up into the pocket. So kind of having a controlled pass rush, using Calais Campbell, getting the hands up if you can't get home, clogging those passing lanes. I would like to see healthy doses of Derek Wolf and Calais Campbell just batting some passes, getting their hands up to defend, see if you can get your paws on one, tip it up, and see if you can get a pick, let alone, you know, three of them. So I think taking away the passing lanes early is going to be huge. Pressing, the Ravens have been kind of using Deshaun Elliott and Chuck Clark rotating at single high. They mainly play single high. About 77% of their snaps are single high as opposed to two high. So pressing, sticking one of those dudes on Mars like they've been doing, 10, 15, 20 yards back there, keep anything overhead from happening, and press them. Take away the inside throws. Make them throw outside. Another big part is screens and draws. They run James Conner to death on draws. They love to take advantage of an aggressive pass rush approach. So this is not going to be a big pass rushing game in terms of, you know, having a lot of time to get home and go chase a quarterback. And the good news is that this kind of plays to the Ravens' hands, it feels like. They've been playing these mobile young quarterbacks week in and week out, and that is not Ben Roethlisberger. So if they're able to press, force Roethlisberger to hold the ball and kind of have a nice contain, of course, and get those hands up, clog those passing lanes, the Ravens drop underneath into coverage in those quick flats. better than anyone in football. What they do is those creeper blitzes where you simulate pressure. You have a DB blitz or someone like that. And then the opposite side, one of those pass rushers is going to bluff. And I think we see some interesting unseen things. Early on week one against the Browns, you saw Calais Campbell kind of jettison back and almost intercept a ball that ends up falling into Marlon Humphrey's lap for an interception. I think we see some things that you haven't quite seen yet. I think Wink has a couple weeks to draw some stuff up and is going to understand some tendencies of these young receivers that Pittsburgh trots out and all those things. But the screens, taking advantage of screens, the Steelers are going to try and utilize those. The Ravens have faced this or had the sixth most screens thrown against them, I believe 27 right now in football. So that's going to be a difficult assignment because Deontay Johnson makes guys miss. Chase Claypool, big dude. Juju, very scrappy. We've seen what he can do. But overall, you know, I don't see the run game working a ton for them. James Conner can do some things a little bit, but you know, I think it's going to be a lot of 4-yard gains, stuffs, a couple 8-yard gains, you know, maybe one 20-yard run at the very most. But this game is going to be won or lost defensively by taking away the primary read, forcing Ben to hold the ball, and then getting home with a nice contained but powerful pass rush.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Elliott's been somebody who has impressed me. But overall for the Ravens against the Steelers, on the defensive side of the ball, I echo everything you say, Spencer. Not overcommitting to the blitz, but pressing at the line, taking away Pittsburgh's outside short receiving game. The Steelers against the Titans barely threw to the middle of the field. They barely did it. Roethlisberger has been targeting his receivers. You know, it's a quick passing offense right now, as you mentioned. And I think if Baltimore can stop that, they'll be in pretty good shape to win this football game. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And hopefully Baltimore is able to hand the last undefeated team in the NFL their first loss of the season on Sunday.
Absolutely. It's going to be a tough one. I'm looking forward to the Thanksgiving matchup a little bit more because I'm smelling a Ravens big win on Thanksgiving, as they tend to do in those primetime games for the most part. Thank you so much for having me on, Kevin. Make sure to go leave Kevin 5 stars in those iTunes review charts, giving you the best daily Ravens coverage. Make sure to tell a friend. If you got a Ravens fan that's thirsty for something that's not SportsCenter, kind of regurgitating the same stuff, kick it on over to Kevin and let him go.
Thanks so much, Spencer. And when we get back here tomorrow, we'll be answering your mailbag questions with Cole Jackson. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.